So this morning, we're wrapping up what would be a four-week series on biblical families. And I just want to take you through where we've been really quick. We started with the idea that a biblical family is led by a godly man. That is our role, men. We are called to lead. We are called to love, to serve, and to protect. And so if you missed that message, you can go back a couple weeks ago and encourage you to do that if this is your first time here. And then the second week, we talked about how important it is to have a godly woman nurturing the family, nurturing her husband, nurturing her kids. That doesn't mean she can't work. It just means her first priority is a nurturer, kind of like right and left hand. The husband's the right hand, the wife's the left hand. And, you know, most of us, if we're right-handed, there's not a lot we can do with one hand. We need two hands to get the work done. Then last week, we talked about the need for the family to be the primary point of discipleship. And some of you recognize that here at Bridge Bible Church, we don't see the church as a supplement or a replacement. We see the church as a partner in discipleship. And if you have kids in the kids ministry, they have take-home pages that we want to keep you informed on what they're talking about. We want to give you information so that you can have conversation starters, because we know it's not natural for everyone to do that. But we're encouraging you, if you have kids in youth group, our youth director, David, he does a good job of emailing the parents and saying, hey, this is what we're talking about. This is what we're going to be discussing. Please be involved with your kids' spiritual growth. But today, I kind of wanted to wrap things up, and there was a couple places I thought about starting. One of them was the idea of what it means to be an adult child, to honor your parents but not necessarily obey them. Sure, that's going to be part of it. But I just kind of boiled it down to five guidelines for biblical families. And here's where my thoughts took me as I was getting ready for this message. And many of you know the story because we've had this conversation one-on-one. But this is actually a story that's kind of birthed out of a lot of personal pain that came from my own family. I have two brothers. One of them is not living now, and he died tragically in 2009. And my other brother, he started out in school to be a missionary. Really good guy, really easygoing guy. He's been here. He's visited our church. Many of you met him. He's kind of a guy that I hoped was going to live up this way, but he moved to Florida and has like a beautiful canal that he lives on. He can go fishing off his back patio, and he's just enjoying life down there. Well, a few years ago, the middle brother, the one who kind of caused all the headaches, if you're a middle child, we love you, but middle children tend to cause headaches, as my brother did. And if you're sitting here going, I don't believe you, ask your older and younger siblings if you were a headache to them, and then get back to me. We'll see what they have to say. This particular brother, we're always competing because we're so close in age. When I tried a sport, he would try it, and then he'd be better at it than me, and he'd move on to another one. That's kind of our relationship growing up. So finally, I got myself into hockey. And so he felt like he couldn't compete with me, so he became a goalie. And so we play these pickup games, and this is the kind of relationship I had. If I scored on him when he was a goalie, I would just talk all kinds of crazy trash on him, and he'd blocker me in the face. Or if he'd make a save on me, I'd give him a quick whack with a hockey stick. That was kind of the relationship we had growing up, because we were just always competing. He was taller, he was stronger, he just wasn't smarter. And so that worked to my advantage, and I made sure I pressed that advantage at every turn. We kind of had a falling out as time went on. And that was really hard for me because, you know, there's a lot of good qualities that he had. And as time went on, he ended up having a surgery where they cut out part of the back of his throat because he had sleep apnea. And through that surgery, he got addicted to pain pills. And then from the addiction to pain pills and the inability to get them, he decided to start dealing pain pills. And then it turned into heroin. And then before you know it, he's a full-blown heroin dealer addict. And eventually in 2009, he died tragically of an overdose in my parents' house, his old bedroom, on October 3rd, 2009. And so it was one of those things that kind of completely catches you off guard. I'm a youth pastor in Michigan. Thank the Lord I lived far away from all the chaos that came after his death, including some threats my one brother had to figure out, because we found out my brother died owing some very mean people some money. So I came home for the funeral, and there was a bunch of people that were there to be encouraging. My old youth group came up from Pittsburgh to visit us at the funeral home. It was a delight to see them, people that I've worked with, people that I've cherished in relationship over the years. And I remember my youth pastor was actually a voice of reason during this time. We actually went out for lunch, and he took my phone off me, because that's what good youth pastors do, and started flipping through my pictures. And he saw pictures of my wife, and at the time, my son, because my daughter wasn't yet born. And he was just highlighting different memories that I have already made with my family. And he looked at me and he said, look, don't lose your perspective. He said, you have everything that I would want for my own son if I had a son. Don't lose your perspective. So he was that voice of reason. He was kind of that anchor in my life at that moment. And then we go to the funeral, and I'll never forget, a family member came up to me and probably said one of the worst things you could say. She kind of reminded me of how this particular uncle had been a pillar in my life all through school and kind of got me through some hard times. And then this individual said, you need to be that for your nephew, because my brother left a 7-year-old son behind. And he had all these problems. His mom was a drug addict. He had behavioral issues. They couldn't control him in school. And he just had all these things going on. And here I am living 8 hours away, and they put this burden on me of you need to be there for him. And I'm thinking, I have a son. I have a kid on the way. I live 8 hours away. This is not even a realistic thought or expectation. And the person turned me to Exodus 20, verse 12. And if you know this verse, it's in the Ten Commandments. Honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land the Lord God has given you. And they dumped this Bible verse on me. And I'm trying to figure out, how do I do all the things I need to do in Michigan as a youth pastor, as a father, as a husband, and meet all these obligations that my family wants to put on me? And so that led me to ask a couple questions as I was getting ready for this morning. When we look at a verse like that, how can we honor our parents when it seems like their wishes run contrary to our spouses? Or their wishes seem to run contrary to God's? Or their wishes run contrary to even our own desires? How do we settle that? And does honor, if we're commanded to honor our mother and father, does that mean we have to obey them every time they have an expectation, a wish, or something for us to meet? Now, thankfully, I didn't just melt down and cave to everyone. And again, I had to endure a lot of what some of you have to deal with on a daily basis, whether it's at work or even your own families, of guilt language. And I often joke with people, I have a PhD in guilt manipulation because I grew up under the pros. My grandma and everyone that followed, they would just use guilt manipulation to get you to do what they wanted you to do by making you feel guilty for not doing it. And you might think, well, that's just normal for me. Well, I want to tell you, that's not how we're called to communicate. That's not how Christians are called to deal with everyday situations with their family. We don't respond to guilt. We don't respond to manipulation. We do what we do out of love. In fact, Jesus says, let your yes be your yes and your no be your no. And sometimes when we're dealing with other people, like, hey, I can't do this. Is that all right? And they say, yeah, that's all right. But then they throw that little bit of guilt in there. Those are the things that we are called as believers to kind of cut through with some truth. And we have to figure out, what does it mean to honor and not obey? Well, the word honor literally means to give weight to. Or to give a position of priority in our lives. And I just want to say this, that we should honor those that have come before us. We should give their advice a certain level of, credence and consideration. But it doesn't mean to obey them. But it doesn't mean we have the freedom to just dismiss them willy-nilly. So kind of a thought I want to start with today is that a biblical family will operate with healthy boundaries and with the right priorities. We have to have boundaries to keep bad things out and to keep good things in. And we need those boundaries so that we can live a life that pleases God. We don't want things to come in and get in the way. But also, too, we have to have some of the right priorities in place and hold them where they need to be, or we could get easily blown off track. And so, by God's grace, I hit a wall around December. My brother died in October, around December. My wife probably remembers this. I had a freak out on a Saturday, realized I was stuck, and just started calling random counselors. And one actually picked up the phone on a Saturday. That was the guy I ended up going with. And I remember I really liked the guy, and I even referred someone from our church to do like Zoom meetings with him over the internet because he's so helpful. And I remember getting to know him and just really appreciating his sense of humor and just finding a lot of wisdom in some things he said. And he said, your life is kind of like a garden. And you've got to work the garden. You've got to make sure the garden has everything that you want it to have and put the effort into it so that you keep the weeds out and you keep the things out that will distract or destruct the healthy vegetables you're trying to grow. And so we work through a schematic. You know, what are the things you want as a part of your life? Where does faith come in? Where does God come in? Where does family come in? Who gets priority? Is it your wife? Is it your parents? Is it your grandparents? All those kinds of things. And I just want to distill those down into just five boundaries or guidelines for biblical families this morning. And I want to tell you, if you get these pieces in place early, especially early in life, it will minimize the amount of stress that you have to deal with from other people. I just look back on my life and say, how much simpler would life have been if I had these pieces in order before these bad things came? Now, listen, I want you to understand something. When tragedy happens, you know, boundaries kind of go away. Things get weird for a couple days. We went home, we stayed with family, you know, did the funeral thing, we were at people's houses. A few years later, someone close to my wife, her cousin, passed away. He was more like a brother than an actual cousin. Everything stops for those moments. We understand what it means to deal with tragedy. We need to be there, and we need to shoulder each other's burdens. That is carrying the load that people can't carry by themselves. The load is so heavy, if left to themselves, they'll be crushed by that load. But does that mean life goes on like that forever? I don't think so. So the first guideline we want to live by, and this applies to family too, is this idea that every believer should have God as their number one priority. Here's what this means. You live to please him. You obey his word. You treat others the way he commands you to treat them. He says, love your neighbor as yourself. Every believer should have God as their number one priority. I want to take you back to Deuteronomy 6:5. This is something that we have to have in our lives so that we can instill it in others, whether it's as parents or as Bible teachers or as people hoping to lead other people to Jesus. We read, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. Some translations say strength. God gets number one in all things. He gets number one in my time. He gets number one in my talents. He's number one in my treasures and how I structure my spending. And that's why we as Christians want to be good stewards of the things he's given us. And Jesus echoed this. He said, when asked, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the laws and the prophets. If you think back to the Old Testament, there's all those crazy things in there. Jesus said it can be distilled down to two things. Love God and love people. Love the Lord your God first, love people second. But here's the challenge many of us, we fall into. If you're a people pleaser, listen, I get you. I understand what it means to want to make people happy. And one of those areas I had to grow in, even as a pastor, is realize there's some people that you just can't make happy. There's some people whose expectations are unreasonable. There are some people that are just downright crazy. And you can think about the people in your life and you're like, ah, yes, I know who they are. They are the ones that I cannot make happy. And pleasing them should never get in the way of pleasing God. Because God gets the first position in our lives. God is number one if we're a true believer. And so what each of us need to wrestle with is, what does that mean that God gets the first position in our lives? I'll tell you a story. For me, what it meant was I had family that had pretty high expectations of me. And actually, I am the first male child in our family to go and graduate college, which is kind of a cool thing. I had a lot of people that grew up in the manufacturing world, and they did quite well there, but that just wasn't the path that God had me on. I remember having this conversation with a family member. I had a grandfather who really respected me, but he was not a believer, and he would chastise me when he heard I wanted to go to Bible college. And I laugh about Bible college a little bit. A good friend of mine, we say, majoring in youth ministry, how do they convince us to do that? We're not doing that anymore. We both kind of laugh about it. He's also a church planting pastor at this point in his life. But I remember meeting this resistance from my grandfather and other people. And I had to say to them, listen, I've got to do what I believe the Lord wants me to do. It's consistent with his scripture. I love God's word. I love people. I'm going to do what he is telling me to do and let him take care of the details. One of the pushback items was how are you going to make money? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they eat. I see that. They have a roof over their head. These guys that are pastors, maybe that's all it's going to be. But I want to do what God wants me to do, giving him the first position in my life. Now, for me, it was that decision. I'm not saying you should go into ministry. If you're here and you're in college and you're on a career track, follow that career track as long as the Lord keeps that door open. In fact, do it with all your might. Do it in a way that Colossians 3:17 says, to do it as if you're doing it for the Lord. Let your work be part of your worship. But if the Lord is telling you to do something that's consistent with his word, it's consistent with the people in your life that love the Lord, that are looking out for you, follow God as number one. See, God should always occupy the first position in our lives. That's the spiritual insight that we need to take from this together. That he is number one and nobody else is number two. So we have to take inventory and ask this question. Do you have any relationships in your life that get in the way with you following the Lord? Might be a friendship. Might be someone you always get in trouble with. It might be someone that you can't say no to. It could be a significant other. It could be a romantic relationship. If there's something in your life, a relationship that's getting between you and God, you have to remove that thing from your life. Here's the second principle, and I know this doesn't apply to everyone, but every married believer should place their spouse second only to God. Your spouse should go no lower than second on the depth chart. That means God is number one. And here's the deal. If you're hearing that going, well, I want my spouse to make me number one. Well, if I made my wife number one, then she would feel a whole lot less loved than by making God number one, because God helps me get these other priorities into order. God helps me put other standards into my life that help me follow him and affect the way that I treat others. And so my wife being number two only to God helps her to be more loved than if I would put her number one of my own strength. So that's why she gets the second position. And this is where maybe you look at people and you go, hey, yeah, that's not really wife being number two. Mom and dad come in and they're number two. Or maybe you can see some couples and say, no, their children take a priority over each other. The way they handle the money, the way that they handle their time, or the way that when someone has a need, they always drop and go running. But we are called to put our spouse second only to God. And that's why in Genesis 2 we read, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife. There's some guys in the world that have not left their parents. You don't want to marry a man baby, ladies. You want to marry a guy who's like, I'm going to be independent. I'm leaving this behind. Doesn't mean there won't be times I have to help take care of them. Doesn't mean that there won't be times where I have to maybe help with a project or be there for them through a surgery or an illness. But overall, leaving mom and dad behind means I make my own decisions with the Lord and with my wife. I might consult my parents for advice, but I'm not going to them to say, this is what you should do, and then go do it. But he says, leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife. They shall become one flesh. When you get married, it's like God has this equation, 1 + 1 = 1. Husband plus wife equals one flesh. And the man and wife were both naked and not ashamed because they were one. There was oneness in their relationship. Sometimes we make the mistake, even in the church, where we have too many cooks in the kitchen. Husband and wife should be one flesh. And we bring in everybody else's opinions. And we end up feeling pressured to do something we know we shouldn't do. I was talking to someone recently that's looking at marrying, or I'm not married, they're married and they're looking at moving for a job. And the one spouse's parents put all this pressure on them and all this guilt on them for making that decision. Now, I remember moving from Pennsylvania to Michigan. We had an 18-month-old son. We had in-laws that adored that son. They would drive 40, or they'd drive 2 hours to spend 40 to 50 minutes with him. Sometimes 20 to 25 minutes, depending on work schedules. Can you imagine driving 2 hours one way to see someone for 20 minutes? Even when I was dating, I'm like, hey, we need 2 hours if I'm going to make this two-hour drive. It's got to be worth it. I got to be able to get up the next morning. And you know, I was like worried how they were going to react. My father-in-law did. He said, please stop by before you cross the border. So we did. Shook my hand, gave me a hug, and put $200 in my hand. Get in the car, and she's like, what did my dad say? Like, he gave me $200. She's like, my mom did the same thing. And then they said, we will see you every month, one way or another. And they did. They came up every month. They didn't make us feel guilty for moving. They just kept saying, thank you for making us feel welcome. Kept bringing in our kids gifts when they came up to see them. And they didn't put any guilt on us at all, because he understood that first and foremost, he wanted a son-in-law that was going to follow the Lord and take cues from the Lord for where he did ministry. But second, I think they held back on purpose because they didn't want to create any hardship between us. When answering a question about divorce, here's how Jesus piggybacks off what was written in Genesis and creation. And the Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, and it ends up being a question about divorce. What a great question to jump into marriage. Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? Jesus answered them, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. But therefore God is joined together. Let no man separate. One plus one equals one, and don't let God unone, or don't unone any two people that God has made one. That is kind of the call for us as far as putting our spouses second. And how does this work out in the real world? Well, here's the deal. One of the things I had to learn the hard way, and if you're newlywed, let me save you. This will be worth gold. Don't make plans without consulting your spouse first. If you're newlywed, don't do that. Yeah, we'll be there. Let me just tell my spouse, and they're like, yeah, we don't want to go there, or we can't go there. We have to do this instead. And so, don't say yes until you talk to your spouse. Actually, rehearse this. Let me check with my husband. Let me check with my wife. And practice that in the mirror. Hey, do you want to go to the game? No. Let me ask my husband or my wife. You know, because you don't want to make plans without your spouse. Don't make financial decisions without your spouse. One of the smartest things our marriage counselor did, our premarital counseling guru, and we would always quote him, well, Rich said this, so you got to do this. Or Rich said that, so I got to do that. He'd say, have a limit to what you can spend and how many times you could spend that amount between paychecks without consulting one another. And listen, let me tell you a secret. It's not a lot. It's like 20 or maybe 40 bucks max. And if you want to stay married, follow that. Make decisions together. Because your wife is second only to God. Don't make major life decisions without talking with one another. And make sure you are listening to one another, not trying to persuade the other. You want to hear from one another, not get them to say what you want them to say. Here's a third guideline or principle. If you have children, they come only after God and our spouse. See, children are a blessing. Here's what Psalm 127:3 tells us. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, or a blessing from the Lord. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Listen to how he describes them in verse 4. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. Blessed means happy is the man who has lots of children. There's kind of a movement in our culture to sort out your career and to get all these pieces of life in place before you have kids. Or some people go so far as say, no, I want to be career-minded and don't even want to have kids. What are you going to do between 40 and 60 if you don't have kids? Like, seriously. I love our family get-togethers. I'm sad that my oldest is like probably a year and a half from leaving. It makes me sad to even think about that. It's like, what am I going to do when my buddy's gone? And then the other one's not that far behind him. And what am I going to do when she's gone? But children are a blessing, and we are called to view them as such. Doesn't mean our life becomes all about them. Listen, here's where some of our marriages in Christian circles go wrong, and probably out in the world too. If your life becomes all about your kids to the point you lose contact with one another, you're doing it wrong. You got to have a date night. You got to enjoy your kids while you have them. But there should be that boundary that you enjoy your spouse. You have one-on-one time. You have alone time. You have, you know, just going out, the two of you. But there should also be times that you're doing things as a family. And the question you'd ask yourself, do you view your kids as a blessing or a burden? My son plays drums. If I wanted that to be a burden, I could turn it into a burden really fast. There's just some times I have to say, hey, look, I'm trying to eat. I want to enjoy my meal. Give me 15 minutes, and then you can go back to making lots of noise. But people will ask, well, doesn't that drive you crazy? We say, no. We enjoy listening to him play. We enjoy hearing our daughter practice her instruments when she plays. She used to play piano, now she plays clarinet. Because we know those are times that we won't get back. See, children are a blessing. And they come before everything except God and your spouse. You can't make your kids the idol. You don't want to be that parent that's like always, you know, Instagramming or, you know, Facebooking them. We made a decision a long time ago. We love our kids. We don't want them to be embarrassed of anything we've ever posted. So very careful what we post on social media. We want them to have a life realizing anything that we put out there on their behalf, they have to live with. But we don't see them as a burden. We see them as a blessing. See, my kids come before my hobbies. My kids come before my other relationships. When I am called to drop everything for my kids, including work, I have to do that because that's what it means to be a godly parent. If you are letting other things in the way of time with your kids, time building memories, time discipling them, time encouraging them, time viewing them doing the things they love to do. Now, I will admit, I didn't make every wrestling meet. It's my son's first year because some of those meets are like 9 hours and they're far away. But we did make sure we were there for all the home meets to encourage him, even though it was his first year. Do you view your kids as a blessing or a burden? The Lord commands us to see them as a burden, or as a blessing, not a burden. Not a Freudian slip, I promise you. Number four, everyone else comes after our immediate family. We read in Galatians 6:10, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, especially those who are of the household of faith. Job made me this graphic, and it's going to come up here. This is the order of priority. God, spouse, kids, then your spiritual family. And the question is, where do my parents fit in? I don't know. Are they Christians or not? If they're Christians, they're part of that spiritual family. And then everyone else. If your parents aren't believers or your children aren't believers, they come after those like-minded spiritual family. Now, there are times we do things for our kids that we wouldn't do for anybody else. That is absolutely true. But as we have opportunity, it says, let us do good to everyone, especially those who are part of the household of faith. It's almost like God says, look, the spiritual family of like-minded believers, that's a special relationship you're not going to get anywhere else. And if you have, like we do, family members that are Christians, it's like you hit the jackpot. It's like you got both sides of this. And it's wonderful. And you get the opportunity to serve the Lord together, to encourage each other together. But this brings us to number five. Sometimes it is right to say no. Anyone here have a hard time saying no? Let me just give you this word of encouragement. It is right to say no at times. And I think we forget that. We forget that the whole idea of yes and no is like, I have autonomy over my life to a degree. I want to honor the Lord with my decisions. But sometimes I have to say no to you so I can say yes to something that's more important. Or sometimes I have to say no to some to say yes to those that maybe are in a more dire situation that need a little more time than I can get. And listen to this verse, and this kind of puts it into perspective, at least it did for me. Galatians 6:1-5, we read, brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual, you should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. So when someone does something wrong, we need to come at them with the right heart, a spirit of gentleness with a desire to restore them. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. And then verse 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. The word burden there is hardship. It's literally a boulder that if it was placed on your shoulders, it'd be so heavy that it crushed you. And then verse 3, for if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then he has reason to boast, will be himself alone and not his neighbor. And then verse 5, for each will have to bear his own load. Look at that word load. In the Greek, it literally means cargo. So cargo and burden are two different levels of weights. We're all designed to carry a certain amount of stuff. We all have cargo. We all have responsibilities. We all have things that are put in front of us that we're supposed to do. But there are also things that come along, like a death in a family, a sudden illness, any of those things, that become a burden that's too heavy for us to carry by ourselves. Here's the problem that I see with a lot of people. They mix those two things up. Everything they're supposed to do, they treat as a burden. Now, if I can get someone else to do it, yeah, wouldn't life be grand if someone else would take care of all our responsibilities for us? Wouldn't life be grand if someone else paid your bills for you? Wouldn't life be grand if someone else cooked your food all the time and did your grocery shopping? Now, some people are in a position in life where they need that extra help. But most of us, you know, it might be an added blessing if someone did that, but if we live with the expectation that people did the things that we were supposed to do, we would be in sin. We would not be carrying our own cargo, as Scripture says we are responsible for. Instead, when we treat cargo like a hardship, what happens is we become lazy people. When we treat burdens like it's cargo, like, hey, I could just do this myself, I'm good. And believe me, I know there are some Christians that like that. They take care of all their responsibilities. They take care of all the heavy things in their life. They don't want help from anyone. It's kind of a pride thing. And then before you know it, they're like out of gas and running on empty and maybe blowing up on people because they're so worn out and strung out. When it comes to burdens that would crush us, sometimes we need to let others help us shoulder that load. But I think the problem in the United States is far more the other way, that we need to become a people that are willing to take the responsibility for the things that God says, hey, these are your responsibilities. See, when it comes to saying no, sometimes you have to say no to bad behavior in your family. Sometimes you have to say no to manipulative language. Because manipulation, you know, we tend to not rank it as high as other sins. Manipulation is a sin. It really is. And sometimes we put up with it in the church when we shouldn't have. And shame on us for doing that. Sometimes you have to say no to helping others. Maybe you're physically unable. Maybe you're neglecting your family and you really can't give up the time. Maybe there's other responsibilities you've got to get to. But sometimes we have to say no to helping others, even if it's a good thing. Sometimes you have to say no to social engagements. I married an introvert, and I didn't know that at the time because she had such good people skills. And one of the things I was trying to explain to someone, if she hears, we have nothing to do tonight, before I know it, it's like sweatpants on, hoodie, comfortable, feet propped up. My line of thinking is, we have nothing on the schedule. What can we do tonight? What can we get into? Who can we hang out with? We're like polar opposites. And sometimes it's better to say no to social engagements to have that margin in your life. Sometimes we have to tell people, not only no, but not ever. This can't ever happen. There needs to be a healthy boundary there. Sometimes and you may not have had to deal with this, I've had to deal with this, where a family member was constantly at risk at injuring my own kids. We just say, no, there's not going to be any more family get-togethers. We just say, we'll meet you in a public restaurant. We still value the relationship. We still want to honor you. But we can't put our kids at risk just because you want to have a get-together when you can't control the other child. Boundaries and saying no are good things. And kind of the spiritual insight that kind of just wraps all this together is that when we have priorities in order, that is when we have the best chance of having a healthy family. But we want to do it in a biblical way. So I was talking to someone this morning and they said, well, you know, how do I say this or how do I say that? Well, I think it's 1 Timothy 5:2. It gives this warning that I think is a great warning to put in place when we're dealing with difficult people, even our family. It talks about not rebuking an older man, but encouraging him as you would a father. If you've got a parent that is just very difficult, or if you've got a child who doesn't understand boundaries and they should be grown and they should be taking care of their own stuff, it's okay to, in a loving way, say, I can't do that for you. I want to give you permission that if you're saying, I want to honor the Lord with my life, make sure you have your priorities in order so that first and foremost, you're taking care of yourself. You want to take care of your health, your spirituality. You want to be walking closely with the Lord. You want to take care of your spouse, the one that God put next to you. And then you want to take care of your children, the ones that God put under you. They are the ones under your care. And then as you see fit, as you have room in your life for other opportunities to serve, we take care of our spiritual family first, and then we take care of everybody else. That is the way that I believe God has called us to live. If you have questions on this, believe me, I had lots. I remember one time we were sitting down with a counselor because trying to figure out how to deal with a difficult situation. And the individual is a good friend of mine, had his counseling hat on, has his notepad out, ready to take notes. I'm like, look, you don't understand. We already know what the problem is. We agree on that. We need help coming up with a solution. And I watched this guy kind of sit back in his chair and go, oh, I'm not used to having people that come in agreeing right away. It's like, no, we just don't know what to do. I encourage you, find that help from an older Christian or someone who loves the Lord. And I just want to tell you too, if you find a good biblical counselor, that is money well spent. But we want to be leading families that function the way that God has called us to function and not run the rat race the rest of the world runs. One last thing, it is also okay to say no to sports. It really is. You might not hear that anywhere else. But we want to make sure that as we talked last week, as parents and family leaders, we want to be the first stop for discipleship.